If you are listening to this podcast, it means you are searching. Searching for someone who understands you. Someone who gets you. You are yearning to be understood and to belong. Welcome to the Someone Gets Me podcast, where we help smart, talented, and sensitive people navigate an often insensitive world. Let's welcome your host, ambassador, author, speaker, and mentor, Diane Allen. Diane has the experience and knowledge to educate and inspire, as she has been there and understands your unique intensities and their challenges.
Hey friends, it's Diane with Someone Gets Me. And today I have an interview for you of a very talented, amazing man. I've known him for many, many years in all different kinds of ways. But the thing that always strikes me about David is his authenticity and how real he is. And so on an intuition, I just contacted him and said, hey, come be on the show with me. So let me tell you a little bit about David Scalchetti. He's a network marketing genius, and he's been in that profession for over 20 years. He has helped so many different companies and probably thousands of people, maybe more, really become successful entrepreneurs and create a lifestyle that I bet they never even imagined that they could have. In 1999, he became a distributor for a health and wellness company. He built that organization, and then he excelled beyond even what anyone thought. Then he took a break with his kids and family, and then did it again from scratch. Most people don't create that kind of business once. He's done it twice. How amazing is that? And he's a great guy. You're going to love listening to him. He is the networker's networker. So if you're somebody who thinks you're great at networking, you can learn from David. And if you're kind of scared of it or don't really know how to do it, you can really learn from David. He has a great book out, Ripple Marketing, that I have read, and I use what he says in it because it's brilliant. So outside of business, if you see Dave on social media, you will see him enjoying his kids, his wife, his family, traveling all over the place, and just generally having a good time. He has a life philosophy all around five F's. I'll let him tell you about that because it's really neat. So I'd like you to welcome with me to the show today, David Scalchetti. Welcome, David.
Well, thank you very much, Diane. It's a pleasure to be here.
I'm so glad you're here because there's so many just authentic, neat, great things about you that we all will enjoy hearing. And I'd like us to start a little bit about just who are you when you look it back and you're like, who is David anyway? Like, what turns you on? What excites you? How did you get where you are in your life? What's your vision? Anything that feels like coming up that just kind of lets everyone see who the great man is I'm talking to.
Well, I've had a really amazing journey. I'm 51 years old. I'll be 52 in a couple weeks here. And I've actually, from a business standpoint, I'm a lifestyle entrepreneur. I mean, how I define that is, there's so many entrepreneurs out there that are kind of owned by their business. And I've elected to kind of turn the table on that. So I don't let the business own me. I kind of wrap my whole world around the businesses that I build. And that's one of the core reasons that I ultimately selected network marketing as my core profession. But this entrepreneurial journey started back in the late 70s. And for those of your viewers that are old enough to remember the late 70s, we had an oil embargo. And it was tough. It was tough to get gasoline. And depending on where you were in the country, and depending on what your license plate, whether you were odd and even number on your license plate, that dictated when you would get gas. And so this is going back. I was in the fifth grade. And, my parents, I guess the thing that really led it to this was my parents, I asked them for a motorcycle, a moped. And they said, you know, Dave, you can have anything you want, anything. You just need to go get it. And you're going to need to work for it. So this whole idea that came about, we actually saw these huge lines of people waiting to get gas. And a friend of mine, his father worked for a supermarket chain, and he had like all this excess like coffee and lemonade mix and all these things in his garage. And we said, well, let's just mix this up and go sell it. And so we went, and we had this really amazing, captivating audience where literally there were hundreds of cars in line. And we'd go up there with a wagon and we'd just drag our way right down the line. And I'm not sure if they just felt sorry for us or if they really need their caffeine fix or not. But I think it was like 25 cents or something like that. But the fascinating thing is within an hour and a half, we cleared like $20 to $30. And to put that in perspective, I think the minimum wage back in the late 70s was less than $2 an hour. So we were literally working full day, full like 8 hour days for a good portion of America and earning just as much sitting here in fifth grade. And so anyhow, that's how it started. And then I got a taste of it because it was kind of cool walking home with big pile of change in my pocket. And you know, it went off to, you know, selling bubble gum and Jolly Ranchers on the school bus, to shoveling driveways. I mean, we hustled. And so myself and some friends, my brother, we made some really great income at a very young age. And that's really set it forward from an entrepreneurial standpoint. I'm very blessed. My father, incidentally, he was an entrepreneur, you know, kind of still is an entrepreneur as well. And so it was good to learn by somebody who I watched literally go under a couple times and brush himself off and regroup and take the hill again. And most entrepreneurs can't do that. When they reach some type of failure, sometimes it's so mind-bending that they never get back up. But, you know, I learned a lot from my father, my parents, and the way they raised us. Very blessed that I went to college and I was put through college. Many people don't have that luxury, but my parents worked really hard to put myself and my brother and my sister through school. But when I got out of college, it was 1990. You know, again, for those who are around then, it was a pretty heated recession. And I had this goal of going to Wall Street and being an investment banker. But the truth is, because of the recession, there were no analyst positions. The analyst programs were kind of shut down for that year. So I was really forced, Diane, to go out and do what I know best, which is entrepreneurship, you know? And I just went down to Jersey Shore, started an advertising business, you know, and just hustled that for a couple of years. The recession, the economy came back and ultimately went to get that Wall Street job and became a financial advisor for the high net worth division of a pretty prominent investment bank. And not too soon after that, I came across the world of network marketing, which was interesting. Yeah, so that's my journey up to the point of finding this amazing industry.
That is amazing. What a great journey. It's like you've been hustling like since you were a little kid and finding opportunities and things like that. So I imagine that procrastination is not real big in your world for you, that since you're a go-getter, right? Is that true?
It's not true.
It's not true. So how do you get
it? I say that tongue-in-cheek only because you know, the truth of the matter is I've been kind of winging it most of my life. I mean, I'm relatively organized, and when I get on purpose and I have a particular goal, I can, you know, hone in on it and go out and get it. This whole lifestyle entrepreneurship, I love working, but I'm not the type who wants to work myself into the ground. You know, I think, you know, I just had a conversation, you know, an hour ago with somebody where we were philosophically talking about one's approach to entrepreneurism, our approach to building a business. And my approach kind of shifted in this last year. I actually hired a personal coach myself because I felt I needed to take my game to a new level. And one of the themes of this particular coach is about legacy leadership and leaving a legacy. And in doing so, there's a lot to it. But the easiest way to go out and do it is to go out and make an impact. And so for me, and I think for a lot of people in network marketing in general, they come across a company, they come across a product, and it's all about, hey, selling that product or trying to build or recruit somebody into a sales organization. And I've completely, it used to be like that way for me, but I took a complete shift where I focus solely on understanding the person I'm working with, understanding who they are and where they want to go and why they want to do it. And then try to, you know, focus on helping them go out and achieve something and help them understand that if you just go out and make an impact with people, that it comes much easier. You know, when you have a particular, when you're on purpose with why you're doing things, it becomes much easier versus trying to do something knowing you're going to get paid for doing it. If that makes sense. So it's a little bit of a shift, but it's very, very powerful. Not only when you utilize it as an individual, but when you inject it into an organization of leaders, really cool stuff can happen.
Right. I think about legacy a lot. In fact, I teach my clients to think seven generations down and think that far ahead so that you can understand that your impact, you want it to ripple out that far. It's not all just short-term things.
Yes.
So how do you help people get over procrastination? Like you get to know them and you can hear their why and you know what's going on. And you know, we all deal with procrastination somehow. And I'm sure you come up with that with people that you're guiding and helping. And so what are some tips for all of the people who procrastinate that you would share?
You know, it's a great question, Diane. And I think that to answer it, I think you have to define why people procrastinate first and foremost. And in my experience, in this business specifically, I think it's fear. People have a fear of something, whether it's rejection, what people will think about them, their fear of actually reaching out and trying to sell somebody something, you know, their fear for failure, or even more crazy, their fear of success. I mean, I've come across a lot of people that have all the tools, all the tool sets to really do amazing things, but they actually fear success. And so, you know, once I've kind of gotten a feel for why that ultimately that fear exists and what that fear is, then it's a function, I think, of unwinding them to the point where, you know, who cares? It doesn't matter. Who cares what somebody thinks? Who cares what the outcome is? You just got to go through the motions. And if you do it from a position of wanting to help people, it's easier to do. It's easier to do. So helping people break through their fears is an important part. And I think that takes away some of the procrastination. Although I will tell you that in the profession, network marketing, you know, 80% of the people are doing this as a side hustle on a part-time basis. So if they can go out and earn, I mean, many of them have these big dreams, but you know, realistically, if they can go out and earn that $500, $1,000, $1,500, maybe $2,000 a month on a part-time basis, it can be absolutely life-changing. So to help people through that procrastination, it's just making sure that you can help them define why they're doing it. You know, why are you doing this? And then creating a sense of urgency around it, because in this business, it's about creating that momentum. And it starts with, you know, the personal momentum that you want to create. Maybe if you want to build a team and get leverage, that's the reason I'm in network marketing, is get leverage. Then, you know, you can focus on the team momentum. And if enough teams create momentum for themselves, you can have company momentum. And that's, I've been through that several times in my career, and it's a really powerful thing, and it can create financial freedom, Diane, for those who are involved in it.
That is great. And I think that sometimes procrastination, I see the fear a lot. I think fear of success is probably a bigger fear than the fear of failure sometimes. So I'm glad that you mentioned that, because I see that a lot too, where we start talking about how it's going to be when you're successful. And I can see the fear in people, even though that's what they want. And so there's that inner angst. And so you're really helping guide people into their own set of freedom, even if they're not even aware of it yet, you know, that would come in there. So how about overthinking? Do you ever overthink?
I always overthink things. I'm being very transparent. I'm being like, everything's coming out here so very quickly. I have this decision-making process in my head where I used to kind of make decisions based on perfection. You know, and that would stall me out from actually making a decision and moving forward, because maybe I had a kind of fear of making the wrong decision or a fear of failure myself, probably. And maybe that was because I watched my father fail a couple times, you know, and I saw how lean it was. I mean, you know, I remember in grade school and even in the earlier part of high school, things were pretty lean. You know, my father, we were living in New Jersey. My father was a pharmacist by trade. He was building a chain of retail pharmacies. And he was doing it in Pittsburgh, where we were originally from. So he was literally traveling, you know, 300 and some odd miles to his business in Pittsburgh, staying there for 2 weeks, and then coming back for a weekend. That was like my seventh, eighth grade, first couple years of high school. Pretty important, you know, part of, you know, one's life. So, yeah, so I think the focus that I've really kind of, you know, harnessed on is that, look, you just got to make a decision, you know, and own it. And if it's a mistake, so be it. You know, you just make a course correction and move forward. But making decisions and making them not with your own personal interest in mind, that's another piece of this thing. But sometimes you got to make hard decisions that where somebody else's interest is in mind, especially when it comes to business. And so I can think back, and there's numerous, you know, cases that decisions were made on that basis. And everybody won as a result, you know. So sometimes you got to take a step or two back for a giant leap forward. And sometimes tough decisions are part of that.
So would you mind sharing a general example of what you just talked about making those tough decisions so you can go forward?
You know, well, I mean, gosh, let me think. As far as my network marketing career, I mean, I've built sales organizations of hundreds of thousands of people and customers, mostly customers, but lots of people. And what's interesting about this business is it is the people business. And if you really look at the melting pot of people, everybody comes from different backgrounds, different levels of education, different genders, and a bunch of different egos, some with very little and some with very big. And so, with the first big organization that I built through the early 2000s, there was a leader within my organization that ironically was the top income earner in the company. And he had a very narcissistic approach that I personally did not relate to in any way, shape, or form. And I think it got to the point where I just said, I don't need this aggravation. I don't like the energy here. I'm going to step back. I'm not going to quit, but I'm going to step back. And fortunately, I built a business that afforded me the ability to do that. And then spent, 4 years with my children, with my rose gardens, my lawn, my landscaping. I mean, it was a literal sabbatical. But that's a big decision to step back and decide not to build a business because there was this roadblock of somebody who I just didn't resonate with. And so, ironically, it was probably the best decision I made because it allowed me to kind of clear the air, clear my mind, and ultimately go out there and take my talents and consult other companies, which led me to my current company 5.5 years ago. Having a bad experience, making a decision to walk away versus fight through it, and then taking 2 or 3, 4 years to kind of regroup and get mentally stable on it. And then the other big decision was to literally get back in the field and start from scratch. You mentioned that in the intro. That's not an easy thing to do. It's a psychological, because it's a lot, business in general, it's a lot of work. But when you have big goals, it's a ton of work. But the beautiful thing about it, Diane, is that, the organization that we've built over the last 5 years, culture and community is everything to business. And I started that business in Hawaii, I've traveled to Hawaii dozens of times in the past, and I loved the aloha spirit that was there. And so when I looked at my current company, it was very pedestrian. There was no culture. There was no leadership structure. There was no, training structure. All those dynamics that you really need weren't there. But most importantly, there wasn't a culture and a community. And there was the real challenge for me. There was the excitement that I had. It's like, wow, we can create the culture and community. And it was with a bunch of women, incidentally, many of which were from Hawaii. And the way we built it and the way the energy flowed, it's the backbone of our business today, 5 years later. And it's really gratifying, independent of the money that's made or anything else. It's just very gratifying to see people who have latched onto that and get attracted to our company, to our organization, because of that culture we created, with a very focused fashion.
Oh, that's amazing. And having the desire just to follow through and knowing that stepping back was the best thing to do. And so obviously you took time during those years to take care of yourself. Like you said, get your mind back and get it straight and all of that, those things. And so I know that you're very good at taking care of yourself and having fun. So I thought this would be a perfect time for you to share a little bit about your 5 F's philosophy and how you take care of you. You run a big business. You're very successful and you work really hard and you're this cool, authentic, really neat person on so many levels. So to out here, when I see you and I watch you and I talk to you and I watch all your videos, and you have a great charisma and a great balance. And so you must be doing some self-care kinds of things and things to take care of you and your environment in order to be able to be as successful and not stressed out and wigged out and, having high blood pressure. There's something going on that's working. So would you share with us your philosophy of the 5 F's and what you do to take care of you?
Well, look, just to be clear, I do stress out from time to time. I don't want to be normal. I don't know anybody who doesn't, so just to be clear, life isn't always a bowl of cherries here. So let's keep it real. But the 5 F's are centered around family, faith, friends, freedom, and fun. And honestly, it's just something that I like focusing on because, the family piece is everything to me. As I mentioned, I had a really strong, great upbringing, very supportive family. But, what was interesting was, my parents, and again, back in the 70s, I mean, it's amazing when we ran around without cell phones and like I didn't have a curfew. I mean, it's absolutely crazy when I think about the things that I did as a young adolescent, as a teen growing up. I could never imagine sending my teenage kids out into that world. Like, it would drive me mad. You talk about stress. But because there wasn't that interconnected dynamic, it just flowed. It was so innocent and it just flowed. But the family part was important because, again, I had a pretty good upbringing and you know, everybody goes through trials and tribulations, and I think it's important to support and to be supported. And so for me, you know, when I looked into a career, you know, initially coming out of college, it was that whole Wall Street thing where it was about money and power and all that stuff. Well, it didn't take long. As a matter of fact, the dot-com bubble, where I realized how people's relationship with money was so distorted that it kind of turned me off from that whole profession. And it could have built, and I was building a good career. I had a great income and could have built a massive business. Matter of fact, I was out with friends of mine last night who have been still, you know, for 20 some odd years. And they're doing extraordinarily well. But then I just realized it wasn't about the money per se, you know, and I wanted to figure it out. If I was going to raise a family, if I was going to have kids, I want to be around for them. And so, you know, around that whole family concept, I'm really proud of what we were able to develop. I mean, I've changed more diapers than any dude out there, and I'm proud of it because I was a stay-at-home dad. I made breakfast in the morning for my kids. I walked them down to the bus stop, albeit 300 feet down the driveway every day. I was there for them when they got off the bus. I was at the school functions. I was able to coach my son's baseball through district ball, be there for my girls as well. And so that's, to me, I'm almost fulfilled on that point, although they're still teenagers. One just went off to college, and I still have that responsibility to try to kind of guide them through. But the way I look at it is just like my father did to me. He's like, you know, if he could do enough to pass the baton, and I can do maybe an uptick from that and pass the baton, then I've probably lived a full life. So family would be number one. Faith, I mean, everybody has different faith, but I think everybody needs something to kind of lean on, especially on lean times and good times for that matter. So I think faith, no matter what it may be, is important. The friendship piece, look, there's nothing better than friends. I mean, let's face it, you know, there's nothing better than going out and having a good time, being able to say anything and not be judged and have a good time with people. But I think everybody needs friends, and nobody can have enough friends. Although it's just different. Different people come from different backgrounds, and there's always that close besties, those speed dial people, you know, which are great. But I think I think if you're open to expanding upon that, great things can happen. And I'm very grateful for the network marketing profession, because more than, I don't look at my organizational leaders or people I come across with as, I mean, I look at them as business partners, but I look at them as friends first. And so, you know, what I always tell people is, or ask people is, I'll ask some of my leaders, how many times have you, you know, when's the last time you reached out to some of your leaders in your business and didn't talk business? You just reached out as a friend. Because it's one thing when we're on these like Zooms and training events and in the functions and where everybody's high-fiving and hugging and loving. But the truth is they all go back home and everybody has something going on. And so it's really powerful to reach out and let it, because that's what really solidifies, I think, the relationship. So the friendship piece is a really important part of that. The fourth part was what? Freedom?
Yes.
Freedom is a fascinating word. And what I'll say about freedom is that it's all relative. You know, I mean, one person's definition of freedom could be, you know, just not having to go to that second or third job. Another person's definition of freedom could be total financial freedom, you know, being able to do what they want when they want. For me, it's just been able to, you know, I've kind of defined it as being able to wake up when I'm done sleeping, you know, being able to stop in the middle of the day and actually work a function with my family member or something, or whatever it may be. But freedom, it's a relative term, but I think it's a really powerful one, especially in today's day and age, the way things are rolling. And then last but not least, Diane, fun. If you're not having fun, it's not worth doing. I hate to say it, but unfortunately our society is stuck in this situation where most people, and I have these conversations all the time with friends and friends of friends, is most people just aren't having fun doing what they're doing professionally. You know, I mean, lots of people are, mind you, but so many people are not, and they're just doing it because they've got to make ends meet, because the wheel's spinning and they've got to keep the plate spinning, and and take care of business. So I just like having fun. I mean, you know, it's like I said, if you're not having fun, it's not worth doing. And I just think other people like having fun too. So I just think combination of all those things, if you can kind of incorporate it in some way into your world, you're end up going to be live a better life, I think.
You're more fulfilling and definitely a lot richer, right? To have all that balance. Cause I know you like to do a lot of fun things. I always see you at different concerts and traveling here and going over there. And I'm like, you know, and that smile shows it all to me, you know, gotta have fun.
Absolutely.
That's absolutely true. I agree with you 100% on that one. So you are, how do I say this? You're really known for not only building teams, but also being like this leader that's authentic and inspiring, right? And well, at least that's what you're known to from people that I know that know you and me. I don't know if you know that, but that's what it is. So when you're teaching people and you're training people and you're there for them, so you're kind of like their coach and their mentor and their business person, and you've got all these roles, right? Has there ever been a time where you've helped somebody, or maybe you yourself have felt this, where other people around you just didn't get you? Like, you're talking and maybe it comes out of your mouth, you think it's in English and then they don't, it's like maybe it sounds like Donald Duck or it's in Chinese, but they don't get Chinese, or where there's that misstep where somebody comes to you and says, you just don't understand, nobody really understands me, or they talk to you and go, finally someone understands me. Has that ever happened?
Oh my gosh, I think it probably happens every day. I mean, you know, it's like, again, we're in the people business. And, you know, just last night, I went to a fundraising golf tournament in Pennsylvania for Drexel University, where I went to college. And this was a pretty, like, this was a pretty highfalutin group of people. I mean, we're talking about multimillionaires. There was a couple billionaires there. I mean, it was like people that, like, you're sitting there, and I'm sitting there playing golf with a guy's an investment banker. One guy's a neurosurgeon. The other guy's a mergers and acquisition lawyer. So, you know, very regimented. These are Ivy League guys. And here I am, this network marketer. Like, what do you do? I'm like, what do you know about network marketing? And so, I mean, it took some explanation, but they were mature enough to kind of like be inquisitive. And as the conversation went down and, you know, the cocktail party and the dinner went down, and they became really receptive. But I think on the surface, as I go out there, I mean, I think entrepreneurs are weirdos. Honestly, I think we're kind of weird. I think it's, but what makes it easier is if you embrace your inner weirdo. And so I've been able to do that, or at least, you know, commit to doing it, where I don't really care what people think of me. I mean, I do things with integrity. I you mentioned the word authenticity. It's really critical to be authentic in no matter what business you're in, because there's this whole thing of know, like, and trust. And so if you're in marketing like I am, and you're going out there maybe on social media or Facebook, and you're doing live videos, it's not about faking it till you make it. It's not about being who you want somebody to view you as. It's about being you. And some people are going to be attracted to it. Some people not so much, but people are going to buy into your failure before they buy into your success. So by just telling those very straightforward stories of how, hey, it hasn't always been easy. Bad things have happened, you know, family dynamics that have, you know, I mean, some are more private than others, but I think when you're authentic out there, people, well, they get to know you, and if you keep the truth flowing, they may start to like you. And when people like, when you tend to like somebody, you tend to trust them over time. And that's where the rubber meets the road in business, I think, is when you hit the trust factor. Because when there's a trust factor, you've got bond, you've got the purpose, and, you know, you've got that loyalty that kicks in, and you can move mountains when there's trust involved. When there's no trust, it's just not going to move. You know, it's not going to move. So, yeah, did that answer the question? I tend to go off pace sometimes, and hopefully I didn't do that.
No, you're fine. So you wrote a book, Ripple Marketing, right? I read the book. I couldn't wait to order it. I should have had you autograph it. Next time I see you, I'll have to autograph it. So tell us a little bit about the book. What inspired the book? Who's it for? Where can we get it?
Well, great question. I never thought I'd be an author, honestly. But I had a friend several years ago reach out to me, an industry acquaintance, and said, you know, man, you've had an amazing journey. You should write a book about this. You should write about not only your journey, but you should write about, you know, what it really takes to succeed in this profession. Because I think too often people sugarcoat that this is some type of gravy train and get rich quick program. It's not, you know, if one treats it like the multi-million dollar opportunity it is, they can build a really big business. So when I broke it down, strategically, you know, and all I did was start looking at my notes, and I went through all my notes for years and then really broke it down into four particular quadrants that I think, four pillars, maybe, I guess a better way to explain it, of how people can succeed in this business. And the first one was mindset. As with anything in life, you know, whether it's your personal relationships, your business experience, what, it's all about the mindset. And so I think there's several adjustments that most people need to take, whether it's something as simple as going from an employee mindset to an entrepreneurial mindset, or a happy-go-lucky week-to-week paycheck mindset to, you know, a successful entrepreneur mindset. I mean, there's all kinds of dynamics there. But once you get the mindset in play, then you can go to the next pillar, which would be action. What action do you actually have to take? So, I mean, you probably could have written a whole book on that, but it really comes down to income producing activities and knowing specifically whether it's your social media presence or whether it's what you say and how you say it. I mean, all kinds of dynamics. It's the action is where the rubber meets the road, you know, in any business. There has to be sales done, and this is what you need to do to do it. And so what I found also is that for people who take action in the right way and they create a sense of urgency, they tend to be put in a position where they can potentially build a team. And so there lies the third pillar, Diane, where it's team building. And that is why I'm in this business primarily, is because of the leverage, where you can leverage other people's time, energy, effort, resources, skill sets, money. I mean, that's a good form of leverage. And that's why network marketing is so powerful. I mean, so powerful. I mean, I'm relatively successful, but I could tell you there are a lot more people more successful than I. I'm talking to people, just unbelievable stories that have happened from out of nowhere. So how to build a team would be the third section. And then the fourth section in the book is about leadership. And there's all kinds of different forms of leadership. The one that I've really kind of really latched onto more than any is this concept of servant leadership, where serving others is your path of least resistance. It's the shortest path to success, in my opinion. So, you know, we talk a little bit about that. And there's all kinds of other cool stuff, not to mention, you know, all these interesting journeys I've had and stories along the way. So hopefully it makes it kind of interesting, but it's been great. And people, I actually give the book away for free. I mean, albeit people, you know, pay a small shipping and handling fee, but you know, people can go to davidskulteddy.com and there's some resources there. If they want to get a copy of the book, yeah, that's where they can get it. But I'm proud of it, Diane. I mean, I'm actually, it's like anything else. It's like, you know, where do you find the time? You can only split your time, so many ways, but I'm actually, I want to continue my writing career. I think the next biggest piece that I'd like to help people with is their financial situation. I mean, coming from a background of financial management prior to network marketing, I understand money relatively well, but I also understand that one of the biggest challenges people have is based on their relationship with money. And I think it's the general populace, if you look at it from a 30,000 foot view, is those relationships that individuals have with money have put their families and have put our society at large in a very difficult debt-ridden world. And it's very destructive. It's very destructive. And if we don't do something about it, you know, it's going to be a challenge. It's going to be a challenge. So I can't cure the world on it any more than I can cure the world through the products that I market. But if you could do it one person at a time and they can learn something and then they can pay it forward and teach another person, eventually over time, the pendulum does swing in the right direction, I think. So yeah, that's what the book's about. And that's what really kind of excites me.
Oh, that's cool. And I will put your website link in the show notes so that people can jump on there, because there's other neat things on your website, different PDFs to help people out with different marketing and different business types of things that I think are really useful. So I will make sure that your website is in the show notes, and I will also make sure that everyone knows to contact you and let you know that they heard you here on the Someone Gets Me podcast. And I like that the book is called Ripple Marketing, because I was just in a conversation earlier today with another business colleague about, and he was lamenting about the, you know, governments and things and not doing what they're supposed to do or whatever. And I just sat there and I said, well, that's interesting. All effective change comes from the bottom up. You got to get the people on board. You got to get the people educated. And then that will force the change. Top down doesn't work. And so when you just said that, I'm like, that's another reason why I knew I just really resonate with you, because we have that same viewpoint, even though we've never really officially had that discussion. Because I think that's how it is. It goes from, and I think, keep writing. I love your book, and it's useful and it's helpful and it's real. Like, I read it and I'm just in it with you. It's not some out there thing that's all theory and no realness in it. So keep doing it. I'll support you anyway.
I appreciate that.
I'll be back on the show again and talk about that book after it gets published, right?
Yes.
Is there anything that I didn't ask you that you would like to share? A story about a success, something about your business specifically, or anything else that's kind of on your heart that you would like to share that I did not ask you?
Gosh, there's so much. We could talk forever. I just love having this conversation with you, Diane. Mm-hmm. I mean, look, I mean, you know, what I do from the standpoint of my organization, I mean, I represent a company that formulates, manufactures, and distributes organic non-GMO superfoods. One of the core reasons that I got attracted to that mission was because of the owners of the company. They've been doing this for 25 years, and they were very mission driven. And as I dug into it, it just made a lot of sense to me, because I was looking at all of the lifestyle diseases that our society has. And when you really break it down, it's come as a result of the food supply, many of it from the food supply. And so, you know, it's sometimes, you know, in business, if you can get a kind of crusade going, if you have a real purpose behind what you're doing, it makes that much easier. And so it's been very easy to talk to people. And it's not just about, you know, weight loss, although if you do lose weight and get in better shape, you know, you'll feel better. But it was really about the challenge of going out and educating people about what was in the food and how you can improve your physical well-being by taking a 10-day vacation, from processed foods. And the more and more that I've looked at it, the more evident it's become. As a matter of fact, you probably have seen in the news yourself over the last couple months where, you know, companies like Monsanto, who produce glyphosate, which is also known as Roundup, there's been some significant lawsuit settlements. And at the same time, a couple of weeks ago, I think there's another lawsuit for General Mills that produces Cheerios. And then come to find out, although I haven't seen it, I think yesterday or today, Dr. Oz actually came out on primetime TV talking about this glyphosate residue in our foods. And it's a challenge. It's a big challenge. And so, one of the primary founders of our company, an absolute wizard when it comes to product creation, earlier this year, created a product that will help actually remove glyphosate from your body and help repair your gut. And that's your second brain. And so, again, my passion is about that. That's one of my passions. That's one of my passions about that. But I look at it as simple as this. I'm not going to go out there and spend my entire day calling everybody I know and just telling them about it. I mean, I do it over time. But from the power of network marketing, from the power of leverage, we can touch tens and hundreds, if not millions of people, you know, through this model. And so, that's my focus, Diane. I mean, it's a we're really excited about what we have, and we know people need it, and we know people can't, you know, they can't get the nutrients from the food supply. I mean, some purists can, but they're far and few between. Nobody's going to spend the time juicing. I mean, there are some people that do, but it's just a microcosm of our society, and here's a convenient way to do it. And it's just been my experience personally and through watching other people, is when you have a more fruitful, vibrant physical well-being, you become more productive in every other aspect of your life. Every other aspect, including personal relationships with family members, spouses, so on and so forth. So I think it's a, you know, you talk about bottom up versus top down, you can kind of look at that both ways, but you know, it, you know, a clear mind and a healthy body does have that ripple effect.
Yes, it does. And whenever we're feeling physically wonderful, our brains work better too. So I think that that's an amazing and very noble mission. And because the lifestyle diseases are everywhere, I just saw a video about the plastic that's been injected into lettuce. It's at like some of our higher end grocery stores here, you know, and they put it in the microwave and it did not wilt.
It's crazy.
And I shook my head and I made my green drink and said, I know where this came from. You know, I understand where this came from. And I was grateful. I had that moment of gratitude that I found something that actually works like that. So that's awesome. So I want to thank you for being on the show and sharing with us your wisdom and your amazing personality and inspiration, you know, inspiration for entrepreneurs and inspiration maybe for people who are thinking about being an entrepreneur and don't really know what or forced into it, not really sure. But most importantly, for sharing who you are as a person who has a work ethic and to care about your family and other people and being committed as a servant leader in our society and our world. It's so inspiring to me. And so thank you for spending your time with us here on the show.
Well, thank you, Diane. I'm very grateful for what you do. And I was flattered, honestly flattered when you reached out. So hopefully some of this message serves your audience, and it was just great being with you.
Wonderful. Well, remember everybody, you just heard the interview from David Scolchetti, and I will make sure his website is in the show notes for you to reach out to him and really connect with him. Follow him on social media. He's great. Remember that when you keep your face to the sun, the shadows fall behind you, and always look forward to the great, beautiful things in front of you, because you are a rock star after all. Until the next episode, be well.
Are you tired of searching for someone who understands you? Join our Facebook group, Someone Gets Me. In this group, you will be able to connect with others who are intense, sensitive, smart, talented, and wanting to be understood. Diane shares her insights and teachings, and you can connect with others. Join today.